Welcome to the Law Firm Growth Lab, the science of scaling your practice. 3, 2, 1,
action.
Hello, this is Scott Berry, head of MarketCrest, and today I have a very special guest for you. We're addressing the issue that many of you have, which is, hey, is my pricing competitive? Should I raise my prices? What happens if I do? What are the pros and cons? And what's going to happen to my law firm if I don't? Today, we have Jeremy Driver as our guest. He is a fractional CFO and a fractional CEO. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hello, it's great to be here. Thank you, Scott.
Yep. So I actually met you when you were doing some work for how to manage a small law firm as where you are a fractional CEO. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been doing over the years for law firm founders?
Sure. Prior to working with how to manage a small law firm, I was a entrepreneur, CEO, worked for numerous firms in various industries, mostly in oil and gas, because I'm from Houston, Texas, and bought and sold a lot of firms, did some mergers and acquisition work, both publicly and privately, but decided to get out of that boom and bust industry and went into consulting, which I had been doing privately, and then found my way into how to manage a small law firm. And it was a very good fit for me. Loved what I did, professional services, which I had a lot of experience with, and really learned the ropes with lawyers. And having been in the public and private space, I'd worked with a ton of lawyers, not having worked in law firms, but I had to use them often. So not something I wanted to do, but I had a lot of experience working with lawyers and law firms. And so it was a very good fit. And I was a fractional CEO with How to Manage a Small Law Firm. Loved my time there. It's a great organization, and worked with over a hundred law firms, helping them grow, scale, all the various aspects of you can imagine of scaling a law firm. I was involved in.
Yeah, this is going to be perfect then, because we get to meet law firm founders every week because of our webinars and because of our Immigration Nation podcast. And of course, we have an agency that provides marketing services. We provide fractional CMO services. Mm-hmm. So it's a great fit to have a fractional CFO here today to talk about the issue that we hear so much is, should I raise my prices? And law firm founders seem to be very hesitant to do that. Can you talk about why an immigration law firm or even a family law firm might be hesitant to raise their prices?
Well, it's not specific to law firms or even just those two law firms that you mentioned. Raising prices is an emotionally fraught issue. Most of the people that I work with, law firm owners especially, they really like to help people. They want to help people. They want to do good in this world. They don't want to overcharge. They want to provide value, and they want to be a good value. And so, yes, they want to make a profit, but they also want to provide a good price to their client. So there's this emotional aspect of, I don't want to lose my clients. I don't want them thinking that I'm gouging them. You know what? My prices seem okay. I'm doing okay right now. If I raise my prices, what will my clients think of me? So there is a lot of care actually and concern in that question of, should I raise my prices? Many of them know they should, but there's something holding them back, and it's usually care and concern for their clients. I would say it's a bit misplaced, and we could talk more about that, but it's coming from a good place.
Yep. Listen, let's coach these law firm founders up, because we're going to address it today. You're going to tell them exactly how to do it, address their fears so that they can do it with confidence, or at least assess it properly and then decide what's best for the firm. So like how would a law firm founder know if what they're charging currently is okay?
Sure. That is a very loaded question, but it's probably the great place to start.
Yeah.
And here's what I would say first. If we don't know, so when I begin working with a law firm, And we're assessing profitability and cash flow and, what their goals are and how we're going to get there. We're going to first look at the data that we have. And some firms don't have this. They just literally don't. And specifically what I'm referring to is, let's assume that we're talking about an immigration firm and we're delivering, say, visa work. So they're doing like an EB-5 or a H-1B, whatever that is. Delivering that service to any particular client is going to cost the firm a certain number of dollars. It might be hours for an associate, hours for a paralegal, whatever that is, there's going to be a cost to deliver that service to the client. Many firms know what those costs are on average. I know that it costs me 5 hours of attorney time and 2 hours of paralegal, whatever that I'm just throwing out numbers. But many firms, unfortunately, do not know these numbers.
Yeah. Well, they can be spread really thin, right? And if
Yes.
they don't have professional finance help, it could be a long time before they really get to those numbers.
Correct. And so a lot of what I do initially, and I don't remember who I'm quoting here, but I'm going to quote someone. And so I'm giving credit to whoever. It's a famous quote, and that is, whatever you don't measure, you cannot fix. And that's part of what I begin working with clients right away is, if we're not measuring it, we can't fix it. And so it's putting measurements. So if they're using a law firm management software, like my case or Clio or any of the other ones out there, those systems can track this data. That's what they're for. And so we begin digging into the data to find out, what does it cost you to deliver these services? So this is to answer your question about what should they be charging. The beginning is, we have to know what it costs us to deliver that. Not because that's going to ultimately determine our price, but what it does is, it creates our floor.
Yep.
And so from a high level perspective, we want the price, let's assume we're talking to a particular law firm, we want the price to be somewhere between 2 points. That first point is 3 to 4 times your cost. And the reason we've just determined that in all the years that I've been working with law firms, 3 to 4 times in a professional services firm like a law firm, 3 to 4 times provides enough gross profit to be able to fund the firm, pay for overhead, and be adequately profitable. So that would be the floor, 3 to 4 times your base cost. Then on the high end, we have, and many of your audience would be familiar with a term called value-based pricing. Some may not be familiar with that term. So value-based pricing is this concept of, what is the actual value of what I'm providing? So if we use a immigration firm and we're providing a work visa for someone who wants to work in the United States, what's the value of them getting a legal work visa in the United States? Like, we can put a number to that. Like, what is their lifetime earnings? Maybe not lifetime, that might be too long. What's their earning potential over the next 5 years if they have this visa versus if they didn't have it? So we can put a number to that. Now, we don't want to fully charge them the total value. Otherwise, why would they use us? That's too expensive. So it's going to be somewhere between 3 and 4 times their cost, and somewhere below what the total value of what we're delivering is. And we're going to be somewhere in there. That can also be informed by what the market, like what your competition is doing. I'm not a big fan of, hey, my neighbor down the street who practices the same kind of law is charging X. I think I should charge similar. I think it's a data point, but I don't think that's necessarily what we need to do. Because guess what? A lot of law firms don't make profit. And that's the sad truth that a lot of people don't know. And so that, to answer your question, is, what should we be charging? Minimum 3 to 4 times what it costs you, all the way up to the value of what you're providing. Somewhere in between is our sweet spot. And that range can be extremely wide. And so depending upon your firm, if you're a white glove treatment firm, then you might want to be on the higher end of that. If you are a volume firm, that is really all about efficiency and cranking them out. And we're going to get 1,000 immigration clients through our firm this year. Then you may not want to be on that value-based pricing end. You may want to be on the lower end, the value end of that. It's entirely what your goals are in your firm, but at least we now have two bookends and we know we need to be somewhere in between. It's amazing to me how many of the clients that I begin working with are not even above the floor that there. And so it's amazing that they're able to continue keeping their doors open and generate profits.
But it's not fun to not make money and to feel stalled out, and this is one of the reasons why I think finance and understanding your financial situation is key to your ability to grow and scale, right? So yes, it's great that marketing will get you a 3, 4, 5, 6 times earning, but that is an investment. And if you're not making money, then you've got your hands tied behind your back when it's time to grow. So I would tell any of our law firm founders, make sure that you have a firm grasp on your financials, so that you can grow when you meet the right team, when you find the right moment, and you get your opportunity.
Absolutely.
So,
The example I like to use to illustrate what you just said, having your financials in order, or at least knowing your numbers, to me, if you're a sports fan, imagine you're coaching a basketball team and it's the fourth quarter, and I'm the coach and I'm trying to determine what's the strategy we're going to use out there right now. Well, if I don't know the score, I have no idea what I need to be doing. Do we need to do a full court press? Do we need to play conservative? Do we need to buy for time? Do we need to be aggressive? We don't know. And so knowing your numbers, knowing your data, and having your financials in order is paramount to knowing the strategy that we need to implement in order to achieve the goals that whatever law firm owner is trying to achieve.
And I hate to let a law firm founder know, look, if we're going to add $1 million, we've got to really focus on marketing and strategy and advertising, but it works. And I hate to tell you that you also have to look at your financials because it feels like extra work, but we all have to remind ourselves that when we decided to go out on our own and hang out our shingle and become an entrepreneur and a business owner, we signed up for this. We signed up that we would be responsible for marketing. We would be responsible for financing, for human resources. It's a lot of hats. And if you don't do them well, you can't make money and you can't grow and reach your potential. So we just need to open up to the fact that we don't know everything that there is to know about law firm marketing and law firm financials and dashboards and what financial metrics should I be looking at, and what are the benchmarks and rules of thumb? And so, if you don't know all that because you haven't run a company before, you need someone that will coach you up, look over your shoulder, and help you get the most out of your law firm financially. So, let's talk about pricing some more. So, how often should the law firms take a look at their pricing?
I strongly recommend a minimum of once a year, but if we can review pricing twice a year, I think that would be ideal. Once we have the data in the firm and it's visible and it's being tracked, this becomes a very easy process. It doesn't it's when I begin working with a firm, sometimes the assessing and the finding and the amassing of this data is painful because they've never done it before. But once we have those systems in place, from that point, it's really easy to reassess your pricing and figure out where are we. And as time goes by, efficiency becomes a process that we just are automatically and constantly implementing in the firm. And as more efficiency grows, and we continue to get more efficient, then pricing can be reassessed in different ways. For example, we might want to add an offering in the firm, an upsell or something like that inside of a firm that's a higher ticket offer. to add additional value for our clients. So that might be a higher ticket offer. We have lower ticket offers. There's lots of things we can do once we have that data. But I would say a minimum of once a year, that's bare minimum. But I like to do it at least twice a year just to reassess and make sure we're in that sweet spot that we talked about
And
earlier.
you don't have to make adjustments to every single service,
No,
right?
not at all.
You can look at stuff, you can
We're
talk about
looking at
it.
each service individually. And so for instance, if we're talking about a family law firm, you might have a contentious divorce. That's one offering, service offering that you have. You have another one is legitimation or parental rights or something like that. Custody. Those all have different cost structures. They have different price points. We can, if we're tracking our data, we can look at, you know what, right now, divorces are doing great. We're priced well. We're competitive. Our conversion and our marketing is telling us also, it's confirming that our pricing is good because we're getting the right amount of clients. People are signing up and our profit is good. But you know what? We're looking at this other service and we're kind of falling down on this one. And clients aren't taking us up on that. So it could be several things. Number one, we're not communicating the value that we're providing. So that's a marketing aspect or a sales aspect. But also sometimes, and you're a marketing guy, so you definitely can speak to this. Sometimes the price is part of the marketing. So if I tell you that, hey, I'm going to do this for you, Scott, for $500, well, I've just put out into the universe that that's a $500 service. But in your mind, you were thinking, man, I was thinking of something a lot more valuable than that. And so sometimes attorneys think they're providing a good deal by offering a low price point when in fact they're undercutting themselves by going cheap. And another higher priced attorney down the street, the only difference between the two is they just quoted them a different price. But the perception is, well, I'm getting what I'm paying for. And so that's part of
Well,
it.
listen, I mean, let's be honest. I think most of us think it's risky to raise prices. Is it risky?
There is certainly risk. I would not say that it's as risky as most law firm owners think. When I bring up the topic of raising prices, which I do very, very often with new clients that I work with, it is usually met with fear. No, I can't do that. Oh, I raised prices a couple of years ago and I lost clients. All these various scenarios, and most of it is fear-based. But when done properly and orderly and in a systematized way, I have not seen any of those fears materialize in the firms that I work with. Most of them who we raise prices with end up making more money. They keep all the clients they want, and the only clients they lose are the ones they didn't like to begin with.
So, all right. So you bring up another really fascinating topic is how do you deal with clients you really don't want to work with anymore, right? Maybe a bad client, right? Do you just fire them? I mean, there's a lot of options, right? Talk about
There are.
that as far as it relates to pricing.
So, it's funny that people get a little sideways on this. There's a lot of thinking about it, but there's really no rules. And that is, there's nothing that says you have to offer the same price to everyone. And so, let's be honest, not all clients are created equal. I'm
For
sure you
sure.
have clients that are a little bit more work to service than others. And you probably have those other ones. You're like, oh my gosh, if I could reproduce them, I just want all of them.
But
And they're a
everybody
dream to
wishes
work with.
that clients were just all easy,
Yes, of
right?
course.
They're not demanding and their situation is completely simple. It's
Yes.
not realistic, right?
But those are ideal. No, that's not realistic, but those are ideal clients. And what we need to do is inside of any firm or business is we need to assess our clients. We have to grade them. And I think a lot of law firm owners or business owners in general are hesitant to do so because it feels like biting the hand that's feeding them. And so what they don't realize is when they take a step back and they look at it and say, well, the amount of time that you and your staff are spending on those demanding clients, that time is money that could otherwise be used making money with another client. And so if we could say, and this is the example I like to use, it's not very realistic, but it's mathematically correct. If we doubled our prices and lost half of our clients, we are way better off. So we're making the exact same amount of money and doing half the work. Now, is that realistic? No. Does that ever materialize? No. But mathematically, it's correct. And so it speaks to the primal fear that a lot of law firm owners have, and that is, well, what if my clients abandon me? Well, I just have to talk tough at that point and say, look, are you a good attorney? Are you providing good value? Are you doing good work? If you're not, then they have every right to leave you. But if you're a good attorney, you're delivering good value, and you have a good rapport with your clients, why would they abandon you simply because you're raising your rates? I have not found that to be very true. The only ones who do end up abandoning are the ones you didn't like anyway, because they're price sensitive. Price is their key factor. And they're usually the ones that are the most demanding. All of these seem to be inside the same clients. So the ones that they would grade as F or D clients are typically the ones that are most price sensitive, and they're the ones that leave or balk when a price change is announced. But again, if we lose those particularly, I'll say less favorable or less desirable clients, we're actually enhancing our firm's ability to make more money by getting those clients that we actually do want at the price point that we're now going after.
Bingo. I think there is a lot to be concerned about if you haven't built a system where new clients come in, right? So if they're not knocking on your door every day and then you raise prices, you might find yourself with your back against the wall a little bit,
Of
right?
course.
So I would tell founders, get that lead generation system running. Start earning those leads. Get the phone ringing every hour, every 30 minutes. Then you can start to take some financial risk, but calculate it, right? And start trimming some of these clients and tweaking your pricing. Because look, if you're not making money, you can't grow, right? We talked
Correct.
about that. And you can't really raise your prices unless you have access to other clients, you know?
And it comes down to exactly what you just said. If you are not providing value, then you are simply a commodity. And if you are an attorney or a business owner who is simply providing a commodity service that's no different than the person down the road, then you're going to have a hard time raising prices. I coach all of my clients and law firm owners. You need to provide exceptional value. You need to give them a reason why they don't want to leave you. You need to be their trusted advisor and resource for whatever it is that you're providing, whether that's family law services, whether it's immigration, or whatever it is that you're providing. You need to be the person they call first. And if you don't have that relationship, then we need to figure out whether it's onboarding, whether it's client appreciation, whether it's customer care, whatever it is that we need to implement in the firm to provide that level of service that differentiates you from your competition, then we have to do that. That's where we're going to begin. Because I can't sit here and tell you that, well, any firm can raise their prices and there will be no consequences. That's not true for every firm. If you're just a cookie cutter firm, those fears that a lot of business owners have might come to fruition if you haven't built those relationships with your clients.
So when a law firm founder hires a fractional CFO, what should they expect the experience to be like?
Sure. That answer, I'll give you the broad nuts and bolts of that, but also we can get really, really deep into the weeds depending upon the situation. But as a broad answer, it's going to be basic bookkeeping is going to be a very, very first start. So our firm provides basic bookkeeping. And that's going to give you just a broad overview, what your revenues are, what your expenses are. And guess what? I don't expect all law firm owners or business owners to know all of the accounting lingo. That's what I'm here for. So I can educate them and I can actually provide them what I would call a primer on accounting and bookkeeping. I actually taught accounting at the college level. So, and all of my students were, I would say all of them, most of my students were people who did not want to take that class. They
Right.
were not interested in taking accounting. So I had to make it interesting. And most of them came in thinking it's a math class. And what I told them was, this is not a math class. This is a language class. The language of business is accounting. All businesses use accounting. And so if you are a business owner, law firm owner, or whatever, you need to be conversant in this language. It is not my job to make you fluent, because if I'm making you fluent in accounting, that means I'm taking away from what you're really fluent in, and that's the practice of law or whatever. You don't need to be fluent. You just need to be conversant. And so I can help you get conversant and be knowledgeable enough to be powerful and effective in running your business. So that might be getting good bookkeeping systems in place. That might also mean getting the right people in place to do some of that. Outside of what I would provide, you might need people inside your firm who can do this or do that or do billing or whatever, and we can put the right people in the right roles. That's number one. Number two is having the right reports and data. So getting access to, making sure you're using your case management software effectively and having that integrated with your accounting software, making sure that's effective, making sure your banking relationships are good. And then one that a lot of people, they'll feel it when it happens, but they don't prepare for it, and that's cash flow issues. When they can't make payroll, that's fear that a lot of entrepreneurs have, can't make payroll. That's a lack of planning. And we can implement things like budgeting, cash flow forecasting, all the way out to, I like a 3-month forecast when we're cash flow forecasting, 3 months, but we'll do budgeting out to 18 months. And part of that goes into what I said earlier about one of the things I start with any firm is where do you want to go? And let's create a plan to get there. And that's a financial plan as well. So if our business plan is we want to be a $5 million firm in X number of years, well, then we're going to build that backwards and figure out, okay, well, what do we need to be next year? What do we need to be the year after that? How many attorneys do we need? How many paralegals do we need? What's that going to cost? How do we budget for that? Do we need any lines of credit? Are we going to need any other banking relationships? There's a lot of factors that go into there. And we can get as complex as we need to be, but for most firms, I would say most small law firms, we start with the basics and then we build from there, depending upon how big they want to get. Not everybody wants to be a $5 million firm.
Hey, Jeremy, tell us what's going on professionally with you and the firm right now.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I'm really excited about a new aspect of our firm that we're building out. It's an idea that I've been tinkering around with and trying to kind of put the finishing touches on. But in the United States and elsewhere, but in the United States is our market, there's a lot of small bookkeepers out there. These are people who might be untrained, they might be trained, they don't usually have degrees, but they're handling a handful of clients, they're doing good work, they're providing value in the economy, but their business, their firm, if you want to call it that, is not really traditionally sellable. And they have no exit strategy. In fact, most of these bookkeepers, these bookkeeping businesses, their exit strategy is to slowly fade and just kind of disappear
And walk away.
and walk away. And that's sad. It's both sad for them, it's also sad for their clients. And what I have, coming from a mergers and acquisitions background in corporate America, I've come up with a strategy where I think I can provide value to both sides of that. So the bookkeeping firm owner who doesn't have an exit strategy and feels stuck, basically they've created a JOB for themselves and they have no exit strategy to monetize these relationships they've created with these clients. And then they have these clients who are being underserviced because this is an individual who may not have a corporate background in building companies and being an entrepreneur. And I can bring my team and my expertise to efficient operations and scale, and we can provide more value to those clients, and we can provide an exit strategy for that bookkeeper. So it's a win-win in that scenario. So I'm really excited about rolling this out and essentially acquiring and providing an exit strategy to a lot of bookkeepers out there who feel stuck. So that's the exciting new venture that we're working on.
So, Jeremy, we know about all the things that you guys have going on, from personal to coaching to your fractional CFO work. You're quite the entrepreneur. You've been an instructor at college, a successful businessman. You work with How to Manage a Small Law Firm as a fractional CEO. You have an incredible career. How are things going for you personally these days?
Things are going well. They are not without their challenges, though. A year ago, for some people, this might make them uncomfortable. I am perfectly comfortable talking about it. It's my life. But a year ago, I was actually diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. I've never smoked a day in my life. I've never smoked anything. But I was somehow diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. I've been in treatment for the last year. Not doing anything dramatic, just a kind of a minor targeted treatment. That's worked well, but we're now at a phase where I need to, they're going to kick it up a notch and they're going to take it to the next level of treatment. So I actually start this week a new treatment, including chemotherapy. So in 2 days, I will actually go in for my first treatment. I'm both looking forward to it and not, because I think it's really going to help me with some of the physical challenges that I've been dealing with. But my energy is good. My motivation is good. I'm still wanting to grow my business and help other people grow theirs. So that has not waned. In fact, this journey that I've been on with cancer and this challenge has really given me a great deal of compassion for other entrepreneurs who get sidelined by things beyond their control, whether that be, and I've worked with and coached law firm owners who've had, I have one in particular that comes to mind. Both her mother had terminal cancer and her husband had terminal cancer. And much of what we dealt with was how in the world does she manage her firm, grow and scale that firm, while also dealing with all of the weight associated with, those personal challenges. And so I have a great deal of compassion and now a lot of experience dealing with that in my own life. And so I'm looking and exploring ways that I can bring my own personal journey, the lessons that I've learned from that, to other entrepreneurs, especially those who might be dealing with something similar.
Yeah, Jeremy, you are a professionally an inspiration and personally an inspiration. I'm just blown away by your focus, how you're driven, your pursuit for excellence, and how you love to reach and achieve things, regardless of what your personal circumstances might be. It's an inspiration for entrepreneurs.
Thank you.
So, kind of wrap it up for us. If someone starts, if they wanted to work with you, they wanted to have a law firm where they were masterful at budgeting and reporting and pricing and bookkeeping, all those elements of finance that really you need to be good at if you own a company. If they wanted to work with you to try to understand pricing or any of these elements, what's the best way to start?
Yeah, so I think setting up a call with me, I'm a big believer in the personal touch. So booking a call with me, and I start with one primary thing, and that is, I'm going to talk to them about what do you want? I need to know what their goal is, because if their goal is something that I can't help them with, then there's really no reason to work with me. But if their goal is I want to have a XYZ size firm, I want to only work these many hours, all of those are numbers and all of those are achievable, and we can plan and game that out. And we can build a strategy over a period of months or years to accomplish those goals. So I always start with what their why is and where they're going, because if I don't know where they're going, I can't help them get there. But to work with me, they can either email me or they can set up a introduction call with me. And it's a lot of what I do. And so I do coaching with law firm owners and small business owners, and it's what I enjoy and it's what I love and live for.
Would you mind sharing very specifically how you would like them to contact you?
Sure. My direct email is Jeremy, Jeremy, at, and my firm name is Ludra, Loodra.com. So Jeremy at Ludra.com, because it is Ludra Consulting and Accounting. And yeah, we provide everything that you just mentioned regarding if it's finance related or business related, essentially whatever it is that you need in order to grow or scale your firm, that's what we're going to help you achieve.
We live in a time, I think, where coaching is more prevalent than it's ever been. And people have access to others that they can just get for a little bit of time, kind of fractional stuff or just part of a coaching issue. There's no reason to be bad at something when there are pros that for a living are willing to give you a piece of their time to help you be a better founder and help you make money. So I would encourage all of our law firm founders to think about how to get better at marketing, how to get better at finance, how to get better at hiring and managing people. These are all things that need to happen. Jeremy Driver is and has been doing this exact thing with law firms for many years. We worked with hundreds all over the United States of America. Jeremy would be a fantastic resource for you to reach out to and just have a couple calls, find out if you might be a good fit and if he might be a good fit for your firm. And, the ROI on the time spent with Jeremy would be tenfold, right? Because these
Easily.
are key components of running a successful law firm. And if we ignore it, you're ignoring it at your own peril. Jeremy, thank you for joining us. And I'll put your information also in other areas so that people can find you and ask questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott.
Yep. Thank you, Jeremy.